242719 extension 3. Thank you, Richard. I forgot to mention that the entire show. I appreciate you catching that there.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Well, it's 8 o'clock. I don't hear any music, but we're going to go ahead and.
So let's say goodnight. I just hope that they were picking us up. William, I have to wonder if could we have lost our connection to Mike earlier and and Gerhard didn't know. That's what it's occurring to me at this point. But yeah, we're definitely not on the air by now that it's past the 8 o'clock mark. But I don't know. You'd think Mike would have said something to us. But I was like preoccupied multitasking, and I was like at work during part of the show and trying to do both. So I didn't hear some of it. I got distracted at one point. That's why I couldn't really comment at one point when you went to me. But what was Jeremy saying in the chat there? Did Gerhard say the word nigger on the air? Is that?
Yeah.
Damn. He's done that with the Renegade Broadcasting and in that environment. I guess it was okay, but I think he's understood not to. I thought he did since on RBN and
is he still there?
No.
Gerhard.
No. You know, what am I saying? He had to be there. He had to be there with us, or we wouldn't have heard him because he called in. He wasn't on Skype, so.
Yeah, they blotter it out on the archives,
Yeah, maybe Mike was a little annoyed by that then. But he generally hasn't gone there on my show on RBN. Going way back to like that other station, I may have heard him use the word on the air, and it's he doesn't understand how diverse the RBN audience is, maybe not just pro white and even pro white. It's not a constructive term.
I agree. That term,
but it's hard to say that to him without him being put off by it. But just this environment doesn't seem to be receptive. It's not at all receptive and pro white enough for anyone to be able to use that word. I guess is how I'd try to say it to him if we get a chance, but. Yeah. Okay. I missed that, and that sucks. I mean, other than that, he made that one comment about after Dresden, as if now we want them all dead or something. And that's not constructive.
Right. Well, yeah. The that we should have probably exterminated them. That's how I think he was getting on them.
Well, yeah. Like Hitler. Didn't exterminate 6 million, but after Dresden, blah blah. I mean, yeah. It's like that can seem counterproductive, in my view, but. Other than those two points of criticism, I mean, he's really good at talking about strategy and finding.
Well, sounds like we're still broadcasting. Jeremy says we're still broadcasting right now, and I have no compunction about that. I think we've been having a great conversation.
I don't know why. Oh, great. So, yeah.
I think we're talking off air. Hopefully, Gerhard will be listening.
There should be another broadcaster, though, in his show. I hope everything's okay there at the station.
Yeah, Mike's not answering his cell. So we're just continuing on over here. I don't.
Hold on. Okay. So,
not sure what's going on.
Okay, but I don't know. Maybe
concerning.
Maybe there's some technical issue that will be resolved. Yeah.
Well, we should probably stay here until it gets resolved.
I was. Meaning for all that to go on the air, but
No, I think it's fine.
Okay, only live radio will give you this kind of.
You didn't say anything wrong.
Uncandid.
I think you said everything right.
Yeah,
I think you got it all correct. You know.
Yeah.
And I would like to get into the National Socialism for the different races too, because this is what I think would have happened. So, Germany and Hitler, one of the best countries in the world, the most efficient countries in the world, the most productive countries in the world, one of the most kindest people in the whole planet, the most conscious people in the whole planet, the most humanitarian people on the whole planet, the German people. There's nothing racist about saying that. There needs to be a model for that, right? And National Socialism was really actually a model for world peace because it was a model government system that would have worked really, it should work wonderfully for everybody. Gaddafi adopted it. and they obviously Hillary Clinton and Obama and those Jewish crypto Jews went in and slaughtered him brutally. They bayoneted him like up his rear side. I mean, just think about it. This is what Jews do. Okay, these are the people that are the problem in the world, and this is the truth. There's no compunction about saying that. I mean, it's not like it's not true. So they need to stop. And we're still extending them an olive branch to give them an opportunity to stop doing that behavior. You know, and starting to put an end to it. The behavior is not. It's against God. It's against the humanity. Whether you believe in God or not, disgusting behavior. Everybody knows it.
I believe one of our RBN brothers has joined our discussion, William.
Yes. So, Jeremy?
You guys know you were broadcasting the whole time, right?
Are we still broadcasting?
We had no idea.
You're broadcasting. We are live right now. I don't know what's going on.
Wow.
I called Mike. The cells. Yeah. So.
I almost don't want to laugh. I mean, I hope Mike is okay.
No kidding.
Here's the main thing. Do you guys have an N-word pass? I just was curious.
No N-word pass. Guilty as charged. Hey, you know, I don't know what to say there.
I'm not guilty of that.
The way I referenced it was actually just, matter of fact. I wasn't actually using the word. I was referencing
the word.
So
you were just use of the word. Richard.
Yeah, but
it's very clear.
I have a really
We got some other feedback on that, Jeremy. I
got a good friend. I got a black friend that owns a barbecue shop, and he can cover us on that. So maybe we'll be all right.
Hey, you remember the Wire? Remember that show, The Wire? And remember how there was that one guy, the black guy that owned the barbecue shop, and then the one guy, I think it was The Wire, right? He went to go talk to him, and he just like uppercutted him and. I don't remember what he was mad about. I'm promoting the black guy now.
Yeah.
Black guy.
I wanted to bring something up.
The white guy.
Since we're still broadcasting and we should probably do some content because I have no idea what's going on with Mike and the station. I was going to bring up the backlash you guys mentioned in National Intel. You know, the backlash against Jewish power. This is something I brought up a lot. It would do everybody some good to read Stephen Steinlight. And I've brought it up since 2017. I used to call him a stormfront with it. But it's very eye-opening. So Stephen Steinlight is a Jew, and he was on Center of Immigration Studies. And in 2001, in October, he wrote a paper called The Jewish Stake in America's Changing Demography. And it's just completely like it'll just shatter your world. People that don't know about Jewish power, don't know that Jews control immigration. He openly admits in this paper that his fellow Jews have controlled immigration since the 1965 Immigration Act. And that if they continue, now this is written in 2001, mind you, that if they continue with this, bombarding America with like Muslims and brown people, that number one, you're going to get a white lash. You're going to get white people that are going to form a huge backlash against this. And two, you're going to fill America up with anti-Semitic immigrants that are not loyal to Israel. And lo and behold here, I mean, 20 something years later, his words are ringing true. And something that I've always brought up is that I think that the whole Trump phenomenon, and I don't know if Trump's on a plan, I don't know if he's controlled, I don't know how much he's aware of it, but Steinlight's writings definitely affected people like Ann Coulter and Donald Trump, because what Steinlight is writing in his papers is exactly what Trump was pushing, American civic nationalism, fair trade, get out of the Middle East, quit doing stuff to disrupt the cart. Because this particular sliver or sect of Jewish power, they want the host to be healthy. They don't want to destroy the host being America. They want to ride this thing out. And they are a minority. You get people like Stephen Miller, that wrote all of Trump's speeches. A lot of people don't know this, but Stephen Miller, the Jew, went to college with Richard Spencer in Duke. And they were both on anti-immigration protests on the campus, you know, back in the early to early aughts. I don't know the exact years, you can look it up, but they're about the same age. A lot of people don't know that Steven Steinwein, the Jew that advised Trump, was buds with Richard Spencer. And so you start to sort of see like what was going on there with the whole Trump phenomenon is it was kind of a way to placate Whitey and, you know, sort of turn the water down and boil the frog a little bit slower so it don't jump out of the pot. And now what I think that they've done is, you know, the Jews that opposed that, which would be the majority of them, you know, the Jews that would support Clinton and Brandon R. Trojan and Victoria Nuland, all of that sliver of Jews won. You know, they defeated the other sect of Jewish power, and they're just going balls to the wall, all or nothing. They're going to kamikaze this bitch, and they just don't care. And that seems to be what's going on currently.
It's okay to say bitch on the air. It's okay to say.
I have a bitch word pass. Yeah, as long as we don't use it a lot.
I mean, it's okay to say it on regular television, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, we got to be selective. This after 7, probably be a little selective. And yeah.
Look, man, Jeremy, you're bringing up some fantastic points. Fantastic.
Yeah, I find this interesting that Stephen Steinlight, and Richard Spencer were acquainted, because I mean I've always been suspicious of Richard Spencer, the way he'll phrase things.
Oh.
It sort of kind of reels you in, but then pushes you away.
Well,
at the same time, making white people look bad, and it almost seems intentional.
Let me break in, Richard. I didn't want you to misunderstand. Richard Spencer and Stephen Miller. Remember Trump's speechwriter and campaign advisor?
Oh, okay. So Stephen Miller, not Stephen Steinlight, because you said Stephen Steinlight was Trump's advisor.
Well, no, I meant Stephen Miller. I think I said Stephen Miller. Well, here's what I
said. Stephen Steinlight.
Here's what I said is the writings, the ideology of the Jew Stephen Steinlight from Center of Immigration Studies to control immigration and limit it and not scare Whitey and make a backlash. That is what influenced Stephen Miller, is what I meant. There's two Stephens there, and I may have made a mistake.
Well, since I brought up, though, my reservations about Richard Spencer, Jeremy, how would you respond to that?
No, your point is valid. I just wanted to make sure that I didn't make a mistake and say the wrong name. Stephen Miller went to college with Richard Spencer in Duke, and they were both on anti-immigration protests on the campus. And it's just interesting that Miller got on Trump's speech writing campaign really quick. And right about the time that Richard Spencer began gaining popularity, I think there's a gay op going on there, if you want my real opinion. And I've thought that since 2017, but I've been kind of back and forth on it because I try not to go on this path of everything's controlled. But I mean, it really does look like that the alt-right had a lot of gay ops in it, federal infiltration, and maybe it was a means of placating the white Americans to give them an outlet. Because look at Spencer, dude. He's like total, like, dirtbag leftist libtard. He completely just went off the rails. So, I mean, I've never trusted him or liked him, but his behavior as of late just kind of confirms that. So again, I don't know how much Trump was in on this or controlled, but definitely Trump read, you know, Ann Coulter's book. What was it? Something Americanus, Exodus Americanus. That's a podcast. You know what I'm talking about. And she was influenced, and the whole alt-right that was talking about immigration was influenced. So if all that would have done, so if Trump would have won, and if he would have done everything that he said and controlled immigration and built the wall, we would have just slowed white genocide down. We would have been thrown back to the 80s, basically, and got out of the Middle East and done fair trade and slowed it down and placated people so that they wouldn't, you know, do this huge backlash and get all upset. And so your people that are accelerationists, that's, you know, they think it's a good thing that Trump didn't do what he said and didn't win, because they said, well, the whole thing was controlled and we need a backlash. But bros, where's the backlash? No one's doing anything. You know, everybody's just sitting back and taking it. I mean, not us. We're talking about it on the radio and we would do stuff. But like the populace, you know, they went to January 6th. They got gay-opped. Over 400 some protesters got thrown in the gulag. No one's doing anything. I don't know. I hate to be so black-pilled. Let me kick it back to one of you guys, because I'm pretty sure we're still broadcasting.
Yeah, I would say, you know, do what's, like we were just talking, Gerard and I were talking about getting involved in local politics. I'm kind of back on that kick again. I think it could be influential. I had a local politician tell me, you know, who knows my views very extensively, get back down here and talk to us.
Right.
So, you know, I think I'm going to do that. I think I'm going to go down there and I'm going to get back down there and talk to him. And I'm just going to take the chance, you know,
well, that,
especially if you live in rural America, you know, if you live in a rural area, if it isn't completely overrun, you know, by libtards, then,
well, yeah, that's
you have a chance.
That's the most powerful perspective I always get from Gerhard's broadcasts, is strategy, the topic of strategy, where he's talking about gauging whoever you're interacting with, see what common ground you do have with that person. We have so much divide and conquer, gentlemen, over here. I mean, there are some people, you know, even in our own camps who, for example, don't feel comfortable talking about Jewish power, but they'll talk about Zionism, you know, for example, or won't be what we would call racial realists in the way they insist on seeing the nature of things. And that impacts a lot of their, the viewpoints and what they'll side with or not. So, you know, you have to take that into consideration. And it's not like you have to ostracize yourself and distance yourself further from these groups because of these different differences, or that it means that you're, if you affiliate with them, that you're, you know, that you're not legit and hardcore enough for some of your followers out there. It's I don't know. It's also, even with the Trump camp, you know, I mean, yeah, people like this QAnon shaman were definite plants, fed plants, and I have so much documentation to help back it up regarding that gentleman. I heard you mentioning him recently on your show, Jeremy. But in general, by and large, I mean, you have to work with the, well, no matter who you're talking to, as Gerhard points out, you know, on the right and even on the left, find the common ground, because that's what one thing about National Socialism, that it does take the best aspects from, economic and social values from the left and the right, really. And it leaves the undesirable attributes of both, which is really the essence of Jewish power, right? This hyper-capitalism and communism and the way people are manipulated with these extremes in economics. But of course, also, yes, the social ramifications of the, just the polarization and the divide and conquer. It's important with strategy to not let that defeat you before you're even out of the gate.
Well, Richard, I was surprised to hear that, you know, Dan still had some question around communism and capitalism, and that these are both two sides of the same coin. They're not diametrically opposed. They may appear to be that way, but that's a dialectical situation.
And
it's
a lot
a
of
purposeful
people debate,
dialectical situation.
Right, and a lot of people debate on the definition of socialism as opposed to communism. You know, the way they're similar or different and this and that. But I mean, overall, it's fair to say that National Socialism is a fusion of something that's more workable than any of the extremes we see out there
Yes, Richard. Yeah. You have National Socialism is really was started for the people. I mean, it almost in some sense it doesn't matter what political structure you put down, because as long as if it's by the people for the people, you know, there's some degree of variability in there, as opposed to if it's being implemented by the international Jewish banking system, then anything that they put in place is going to be not good for the people. It doesn't matter if it's capitalism or communism or national socialism. But Hitler came in and he did it in the name of the people and helping the people. And if you now listen, the word socialism has a like a kind of a Pavlovian effect on people, and they go, I go to the, you know, I go to the Hillsdale College, and they say socialism's evil. It's a precursor to communism. Okay, look, socialism, when it's nationalist, is absolutely pro your people. So it's a good way to get your people back on their feet. If your people have been put through what the Germans were put through by the Jews prior to World War II, after World War I, what the Jews did with a stab in the back, where they betrayed. They betrayed Germany by sending propaganda over to America saying that the Germans were bayoneting babies. And then trying to get the American people to come to fight against the Germans on the side of the British, so that the British would go and get them Palestine for the Jews. See, this was the stab in the back. So, you know, you've got the machinations of the international Jew working behind the scenes you know, at that time, Germany was under the Weimar Republic, which was a democratic socialist, very Jewish kind of, you know, that's a precursor to communism, you know, the democratic socialism. But it was sort of what they really needed was a nationalist form of socialism. Socialism being where the people are taking care of the people. You're taking care of your own people. Jewish socialism is where they invade your country with everybody from different cultures and blend them all together and make the people in the indigenous culture pay the tax to support that. So that's not a socialism that's going to work. That's a socialism that's going to lead to the genocide of your people. Whereas with national socialism, it's because socialism is going to lead to the propagation of your people, which is what you want.
Yeah, let me break in on that point. First of all, I texted Mike and I called him. I still can't get him. So we are still broadcasting. I just pulled up the live stream on my other phone. So I hope Mike's okay. But let me break in on that point real quick. We'll just keep this going until Mike comes back. That's a very, very valid point you brought up about socialism. Look at Denmark. You know, after World War II, I mean, Denmark was a very prosperous government under socialism until about what? 7 or 8 years ago, they invaded it with third worlders, and it broke the system. So socialism, it's not necessarily the form of government. Does the government care for the people? And with communism, the people exist for the government. The government is God. The government is everything. And they control the means of production. But under national socialism, that's the exact opposite. The government exists for the people. And that's what Hitler did, you know, in Germany, from 33 to the end of the war, 45, you know, he made the government work for the people. And that's the difference in it. But even under capitalism, and I agree that capitalism and communism are flip sides of the same coin, both two sides of the same coin. But America, you know, in the 50s and 60s did pretty well under capitalism. When you didn't have it out of control, when you could graduate high school and open up a business and compete in your small town, you could have a clothing shop or whatever before Walmart and Target and Dollar General, you know, dominated, you could compete. But, you know, currently what they're calling capitalism today is just like corporate rule. So I think what we're going towards and what we're under now is not even communism, because the government does not control the means of production. What you have now is corporations and oligarchs, you know, people like Musk, Gates, Bezos, and, you know, those guys aren't Jewish as far as I know. Now, maybe somebody could push back on that, but they're definitely controlled by Jews. And what did you see, Bezos, you know, when Obama did that? Oh, Bezos. Yeah, I wasn't sure. I didn't want to say
some have claimed So some are convinced that even Bill Gates is. I think Murr is one who said she has evidence regarding Bill Gates that she's sent out.
Right. Yeah. Right. But even so, the government's not controlling the means of production. It's corporations who enforce the COVID measures the hardest in America. It was corporations. Even you go back to Obama and the bathroom bills, right? You know, when Obama, under Obama in the Supreme Court, and they said trannies, you know, boys can use girls' bathrooms. What was it? North Carolina did the bathroom bill. And then what happened? All these corporations boycotted them and brought pressure down on them. It wasn't the government. So what we're under now is, I would say it's borrowing elements of communism, but it's not communism because it's corporations that are controlling us. I think, and then even technocracy, people have used that word because they're using our social media to not only analyze and collect data on us, but to actually mind control the people. Mass psychosis, I think, is what they call it. And that's what COVID was. The whole COVID exercise was mass formation psychosis. Go ahead, guys.
Yeah. I was just going to throw in real quick that, and the Jews use the corporations as a proxy. So Larry Fink of BlackRock is the Jew. And he is the one who is really at all the Jewish conferences, the World Economic Forum. He's the guy tasked with basically bringing in the Great Reset. Well, BlackRock and Vanguard, which is an incestuous relationship between two asset management companies, as I compared them on the financial sector to the shadow government of the Bilderberg Group and the CFR and the Trilateral Commission. BlackRock bought up, and during COVID, the whole plan of COVID was to crash the stock market, which it did by 30 to 35%. So you have the three stock indexes, you have the NASDAQ, you have the S&P 500, and you have the, what was the other, Dow Jones. You have those all crashed 30, 35%, and BlackRock went in and bought them all up. Next thing you know, all of the corporate, these are the Fortune 500 companies they bought up the controlling share for 10 to 15%. And next thing you know, these corporations are singing the tune and they're enforcing the COVID laws. So this is how the Jews rule by proxy.
Absolutely right. And here's what I noticed. You know, I said that in America, it was mainly corporations that enforced the COVID measures and pretty much the BLM and everything. I mean, look at the trannies on the Bud Light can. I mean, you know, the people don't want that. You think the rednecks that are chewing tobacco and driving the four-wheel drives and shotguns in the window of their truck, they don't want that. But corporations are forcing that. It's not the government forcing it. Whereas in Europe and in Australia especially, you had the government crack down on people more than corporations. So that's an interesting point, that in America, where we are dominated, you know, capitalist country, and we have so-called supposed Bill of Rights. I mean, do we have rights or not? I don't think we have rights, because the government just, instead of them cracking down on us, they let corporations do it. Yeah. And so, by the way, it's just us, and we're broadcasting. I just checked it while ago on the live stream. So if you guys want to invite anybody on Skype, we'd probably bring someone else in until Mike comes back. I don't know what happened to Mike, but if anyone's listening to the listeners of RBN, the reason this is not normal, you're not hearing commercials or anything, something's happened to Mike. He's not at the controls, so I hope he's okay.
Yeah, this is...
But
it's really concerning. Maybe somebody called Julie or Sam, perhaps.
I don't have their cell phone numbers. But, I mean, I can keep going for a little while. I got to go pick up Zyklon T from work here in about 10 or 15 minutes, and then I'll be back. But it's just us. So what do you think, Richard? Didn't you say your wife's from Europe, Richard? So does she have connections? I mean, could you give us some input on how the COVID measures and BLM and all that, how that was enacted on the populace? What's the difference in Europe and here? Do you see the points that I was bringing out? Is that it was more government control in Europe and Australia, and in America it was more corporate control?
Well, I don't have any information from
firsthand sources on that, not from her. I mean, she spends most of her time and has most of her contacts here these days. And as far as a gentleman I do my show Mondays with, I mean, he would be a better gauge of that, Paul Edward Stevenson, who joins me on Mondays, an Irishman living just outside London there. But, there does seem to be a bit of a different approach as far as the power structure in Europe. But the World Economic Forum is pushed in front of us now, you know, even replacing Bilderberg as the, the great central control. But it's highly debatable regarding, I don't know, corporations or, well, the corporations are really an extension of the money from the banking industry, you know, and governments, of course, are beholden to the kickbacks, payouts. So, I mean, it basically, I'd say, is fair to say that Jewish banking is controlling Europe and the United States. They perhaps just put more power toward corporations, you're suggesting, and then across the pond, the opposite toward more government leaders and legislation.
Yeah, let me give you an example. So in Australia, you know, we read the articles, and we even had an Australian guy that was calling into National Intel back when John Stadtmiller was hosting, and they would testify that, you know, you could get arrested and slammed down on the ground and handcuffed for not wearing a mask. Whereas in America, you didn't see a lot of that. You did see that in some more liberal cities in America. But mostly it was just get let go of your job, or like the vaccine mandates. You know, the government in America didn't really enforce that if you didn't have a federal job, but you could get fired from your job or some sort of a discipline for not doing the so that's kind of the point. In America, it's more corporate crackdown. In Australia, more government crackdown.
Yeah, COVID showed an example of that. You're right. Good point.
And I say, if you cower away from standing up against it, think about if you do that when you didn't need to. You could have stood up to it, and you would have been fine, and you cowered away instead. That's disgusting. And think about how you have to live with that.
And here, in the fall of 2021, you know, a lot of the school systems were pushing back on the government. I participated in that. I went to Zion was still in public school at that time in high school, and I went to the school board meetings and did speeches. And I'm like, look, you know, this isn't about a mask. This is about, you know, does the government and corporations and the state school board, you know, are you going to give them the right to tell your children, you know, what they have to put in their body? Because if they can force the mask, they can force the vaccine, they can force trannyism, critical race theory in the curriculum and all of that. I'm like, now is the time to stand up. And we did. We had school boards all over America, not just here in West Kentucky, but all over, stand up. And that forced legislation on the state level in more conservative states. Kentucky and Tennessee is a great example. We have good legislation now stopping boys from going to the bathroom with girls and playing in sports with girls. We have legislation that states you can't close churches down in a so-called pandemic. You know, we have all sorts of great legislation that came out of that. So I think the fight back at the state level is a valid thing, and that's something that y'all are discussing with Gerhardt on National Intel. And I think that's the way to go, and just making the federal government irrelevant. And Patrick and I were discussing last night and today on his show that that's kind of how the Soviet Union collapsed. It wasn't armed people overthrowing the government by force. It was just republics in the Soviet Union basically just not obeying. And that's how they collapsed. And out of that collapse, you had Putin. Putin rose to power. And I know a lot of people, this is a good topic to get on if you guys want. A lot of people criticize Putin. He's a Jewish shill. He's not, you know, he did a lot of good for Russia. I think the facts stand for themselves. that Russia is way better off now than they were in the year 2000, as he was taking power. And he did work with Jewish oligarchs. I think that there was a bit of control and a bit of give and take there. But you got to approach that pragmatically and understand that eventually he brought Russia out of poverty, and they became very wealthy off of natural gas. That was what the whole Nord Stream was about. Because when we did the coup, and when our government did the coup under, with Victoria Nuland spearheading it in 2014, the Maidan coup in Ukraine, a big portion of that was about the gas that flowed from Russia to Germany. It went through Ukraine. Well, the Nord Stream went around that. And so that was Russia under Putin taking measures to go around the coup. And then I think another purpose of the coup in Ukraine was that the U.S. government wanted to overthrow Syria, and they wanted to be able to put NATO bases on Ukraine border. And so they thought if they could control the border, they could control Russia a little bit better and do that Syrian coup. And that kind of blew back in their face, right? Because Assad is still in power. So there's a lot to be said about Putin. And a lot of people say I have pictures of Putin on my wall, that I have posters of Putin riding the white horse. Yeah, Trump too. I mean, and again, I'm being straight here on Trump. Even if Trump would have taken kept in power and done everything he said, we would still have white genocide, because he wanted to do legal immigration. As long as it's legal, you're gonna have a big beautiful door in that wall. Remember that? So we still would have had white genocide. It would have been at a slower pace. Would have been kind of a throwback.
Yeah, legalized white genocide.
But I think Putin stood up to the system a lot more than Trump did, and Putin had a lot more power, and Putin did more for Russia than Trump did for America is what the point that I'm making. And I don't think he's totally controlled. I think he's a bit of a wild card, and I think they wanted to overthrow him by doing all the sanctions on Russia, and that backfired. So now we have this Eurasian shift. As a result of America, the Jews in America trying to overthrow Putin with sanctions, it backfired on them. And now you have BRICS and you have all this shift to Russia and China. And I think the Jews are scared of that. That's why they're wanting war with China. That's why Tucker Carlson shills it. I've talked a lot. Let me kick it back to one of you guys.
Well, real quick, I just want to just comment, and I'll kick it over to Richard first, but about you going down, Jeremy, and you speaking up at the town hall meeting is going to be a notch in your belt. I don't mean to make it about your ego, but look, it's something to be very proud of, because you created a ripple effect when you went down there. I remember you telling the story that when you went up and spoke, it started, everybody else came behind you. So that is such a fantastic, phenomenal thing to have under your belt. What a heroic story that is, and you deserve every bit of credit for what you did there as a hero. Take it over to Richard.
Cool. Yeah, I appreciate that. A lot of people did that too in other counties. But by the way, our sheriff was totally behind us. He sat there and he made sure everything was good, and he didn't stop anyone from talking. It went on for like 3 hours. The school board left. They left the gymnasium. They walked out on us, and we just kept on going. People just got up and spoke. Dude, that's power. I felt a power that I never had felt before. I really think that if I wanted to, I could have told them to go home and get guns and come back, and they would have done it. Like, maybe not, but I'm just saying, like, there was about 300 parents that were totally, on fire. Because they were just done. They were just sick of all the COVID measures, and they didn't want their kids being exposed to trannyism and critical race theory. And they understood that that's what it would lead to. If we give on this mask thing, it's going to just lead to all the other stuff. And that, and me and thousands of other parents doing that in Kentucky, it forced legislation. It put pressure on our legislators. Gotta kick it to you, Richard.
Yeah, no, we shouldn't give up on speaking locally, and certainly Gerhard is an inspiration to us all, because with all the viewpoints he has to potentially share, depending on who's ready for what information, as he seems to lay out in his strategy, we can be more effective with any audience, you know, than a lot of us are led to believe, and really deceiving us into no longer even trying in our own lands for positive change. That's the real crime in PSYOP above any others. It's this detrimental tribe is guilty of. I was trying to add, I don't know, we'll see if, I'm trying to let a couple people know in case they want to help us fill in here, you know, since we don't really know what's going on with the board and our illustrious chief board op. I hope he's all right there. But yeah, no, definitely speaking locally is not something people should give up on. And they're trying to scare people, you know, even regarding the attack on our children, the transgender and gay thing, and not notifying parents of how they identify, trying to take children away from parents at a, you know, any little whim of a discontent shared. One mother speaking out at the school board is facing a lawsuit. And but you know, we have to go on the offense and not wait to have to go on the defense, because that really is another great tactic of this Jewish power structure is, you know, how does it go? The Jew shrieks out in pain as he's striking you, and always accuse your enemy that which you are guilty of. Is that more was it Marx, yeah, or that was more Alinsky tactic, right, Jeremy?
I think so. And consider this. I mean, you talk about like Merrick Garland and the FBI talking about how they're going to target parents that speak up in these school board meetings. Well, you know, you're taking the most flack when you're over the target, right? And that's why they were wanting to target these parents, is because it was making a difference. And so I noticed Gregory McGill joined. I'm going to kick to Gregory in a minute, but let me just say this real quick. I know there's some people in our circles that would be more for taking up arms and doing something like that, and I don't think they're feds. You know, we mentioned Paul from California. I like Paul. I think his content is spicy, and you know that I like spice, Richard, especially for my lunch when you do your show during the day. But I think that these people have a legitimate, like, I think that's just the anger that they feel, and then you have people that are more more central, that like Patrick Slattery that wants to do more activism and political activism and that such. And I think both points of views are good, and I don't think we should divide up and fight with each other over that. I will say this. I don't think that any kind of armed uprising would work right now. The system is way too powerful, and there's still a lot to be done at the state level with legislatures and with political activism. And that's kind of where I stand. But let me tell you this, just to clear the record, I would not be opposed to that when the time comes. And I don't know when that time is, but it's not now. I'm certainly not a coward, and there's Irish blood that runs through these veins, and I'm ready to fight, like, for this country and for our people. Hey, let's kick it over. But I want to do it strategically. I don't want us to be picked out, you know, because the FBI can just go to your house. 25 federal agents, SWAT gear, and just take you out like they did, you know, General Flynn, or, you know, some of these other people that they just arrested. Some of the abortion protesters, they could show up at 4 a.m. and take you out. So the system is way too powerful, and we are not organized, and there's not enough people that has the balls to do that right now. And so I think our approach should be more towards political activism. But let me kick it back to you guys and welcome Gregory. I see Gregory McGill joined. Hey, Greg, are you there?
Hey, guys, can you hear me?
Yeah,
yeah, we got you, man.
Oh, cool. I'm cool. Glad the Skype is working. It's a hit or miss from my house. Oh, that's awesome.
Crystal clear right now. It sounds awesome.
Woohoo! Yeah, I turned on our little hotspot thing. I think that might have done it, and we have some data on it. So living in the woods here, sometimes it gets spotty. But well, wow, what a topic. The problem is, how can you fight in this enemy that we can't even really identify right now? I mean, who are we supposed to fight? Liberals? I mean, come on. We don't have a clear. This is a war like it's never been fought before. It's an information war, first of all. And I don't really know how it can go conventional like that. And like you said, yeah, they can show up at your house, and anybody that's, I mean, they try that with me, they better be polite, right? I mean, but if they come in guns blazing, that's what they're going to get. So I don't think the violence is any kind of solution right now, because we're too scattered, absolutely way too scattered to even consider it.
Yeah, Greg, great point. I think you're making a great point. And Jeremy, you as well. I agree with you guys that, tactically speaking, you really don't stand a chance against them. It's good that we have guns and that we can defend ourselves in our homes.
Right.
But there's still so much work we can still do on the local level that we can push back with. And we can see that when we do that, it does have a ripple effect. You know, Blackpilled did a great documentary on the ripple effect that one person's influence can have on a whole group. So, you know, if that one person is absent, that could be a catastrophic for the outcome of something a lot larger. So don't think that we don't have a lot more work to do still. Because if you go, you take up arms and you go out and start doing that, you're sacrificing yourself, and they're going to use that as an example or reason to, you know, crack down more. And it won't even be right. One of those psyops. It'll be an actual situation where they'll call, you know, it won't even be one of their psyops. It'll be like a real situation that they'll use as an excuse, to crack down. And I'm not saying that we should, there's never a time and a place for that, but I agree with Jeremy that now is not it. And when it does come down to that, it'll probably be like this is just you defending yourself, you know, you are just, you know, this is like the last ditch effort or last resort thing, or defending your family or whatever you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, who are we supposed to be fighting that you can't, like, we always hear these, the government come, oh, well, you're going to take on F-16s and all that. That's not who, that's not who the enemy is. The enemy is so within and so buried in this political structure. It's not two opposing armies anymore. And all this, you know, people, I see videos all the time. Oh, well, no, they're never going to invade the United States. Right. No one's ever going to invade us. That's exactly right. They don't have to, because this is being done in such a, you know, usurped, infiltrated way from within. And our republic is being dismantled from within, and they got everybody believing we're a democracy and not a constitutional representative republic. And that's an important distinction, because we're not a democracy, but they have, you know, two generations thinking that's what we are. And I don't know, we're who's the enemy? Who are you supposed to go fight?
Greg, I think it's important. You bring up a great point. It's really important for us to have the most pressing arguments, you know, to figure out what are the most pressing arguments right now and prioritize them first. And then if we have the guts to go down in front of, what's going to be more consequential? If you go take up arms, or if you go down in front of the city council and you say, Jews are behind this, or something like that.
Right. Right. Which they might shoot you for that now. So. It's getting close.
Let me hit on that. I gotta go pick up Tyler. On that point, when we were doing our school board meetings, like I said, the sheriff was sitting there and like letting us go, and he was pretty much rooting us on. The sheriff and the local peace officers were on our side, as they were in many, many states in America. What are you going to do? You're not going to take up arms against them. You want them on your side. Exactly. The time does come, not what it is, to take up arms. You want the sheriff, because that's the legal representative. You know, he's an elected authority that has the power of force behind him. Those are the people you want on your side. So, again, like you guys are mentioning, great point. What's, if you're talking about taking a farm and doing military action, what's the target?
Right.
Right.
Who are we talking about going against?
You need to have your sheriff on the side. Right. You need to have the sheriff on your side. Then when the sheriffs and peace officers are on your side, if the feds threaten to come to your house, you got all the sheriffs and the deputies coming to your house to help you out. That's my point.
How do you do that, Jeremy? I've heard you form a committee of safety and you get with the sheriffs. And my wife is actually on one. My wife's on a committee of safety. That's what she does. That's one of her things. And they're trying to get in touch with – well, they have a sheriff's candidate around here they're talking to who hopefully will win. But they feel the one now is compromised. So they can't talk to him.
Gentlemen, I believe we have another participant who's joined the roundtable panel here, Mr. Stephen Douglas Whitener. Can you hear us?
Yeah, all right. Woohoo!
Howdy, y'all. I had to take my mute. I was listening earlier, but I lost the stream. Now, when I parked here, I couldn't bring the RBN stream up again, but we assume we're still live, I guess.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, howdy. Thanks for adding me. Yeah, I was wanting to ask you something, Jeremy. For going back to stuff you talked about before, do you mind if I ask Jeremy a question, y'all?
Yeah, I'll take it real quick. Then I got to go pick up.
You were talking about this faction with Stephen Miller and the other guy went to. They went to Duke together. The guy from the alt-right. I can't remember his name
Richard
Spencer. They went, and that was this faction, this particular faction that wants to slow things down. How did Kushner and Ivanka relate to that group of Jews? Are they the same? Is that how bought, or is this a different sect or something? That's what I wanted to ask. Yeah, thanks.
Well, Kushner is a very left-wing Jew. Now, he is... Chabad Lubavitch. I want to pronounce that right. Chabad. And that's the same.
Sorry.
Most of those, and Kushner didn't wear the hat and dress up, but most of those Jews were, controlling Russia. But the majority of Chabad, wear the black hats and the beards and they procreate like rabbits. I don't think they're really a power, but Kushner is a part of a left-wing Jew. Like he would be more in line with the, Hillary Clinton, Obama type Jews. But once Trump took power, guess what? He's married to Trump's daughter and he gets in there and subverts. So I think that Jared Kushner is in exact opposition with Stephen Miller on their views of immigration, but Kushner was willing to, get in and get in and subvert Trump's presidency. And we saw that Ivanka wanted a pony and Trump, authorized missiles to be lobbed at Syria in April of 2017. And so we see that subversion. That's a huge part of why Trump couldn't get anything done is because he had Kushner right there working his Jew magic. But now what I'm proposing is that Stephen Miller is a right-wing Jew that wants to slow immigration down. I think he was influenced heavily by Stephen Steinweiss' writings from Center of Immigration Studies in 2001, which the basic thesis is don't do immigration too fast. You're going to cause a white lash and you're going to bring a bunch of anti-Semitic Muslims into the U.S. that are going to hate Jews. But that faction of Jewish power lost. And so the faction that is in power right now under Joe Brandon, Victoria Nuland, Anthony Blinken, Merrick Garland, all of these people are just kamikaze. Let's bring up as many people as we can in. Let's do sanctions. And who cares if we destroy America as long as we overthrow Russia? So that's my answer to that question. I got to go pick up tea. I'm going to listen to you guys, and I'll be back in about 20 minutes.
Thanks, hey. Jeremy. Yeah.
Hi, Jeremy.
And I think that Trump is just a speed bump. Like you said, I don't believe we had any chance to go back to the 80s because that was the Marilita boat lift, too. And all of those Cubans came over then. I mean, it just kind of – Trump maybe slowed things down a little. I did hear something about going back to the 80s. I don't think there's any way we'll ever do that. No, that's another planet now.
Well, Well, they don't want those Cuban guys, Stephen, because they came from a communist country. They are not with what's going on. They all want to vote Republican or Trump supporters. So the ones that have come from communist places, they don't want them because they know that who they're going to be with.
Yeah, anybody who came here from a communist country knows what's going down. I noticed that. I noticed that when I was going to these meetings locally for a group that wanted to start a school and a business park right before the Russian special military operation, right January and February of a year ago. And there were some guys in there who had immigrated from Ukraine and another one from the Czech Republic, I believe it was. They were pretty fed posty. They were ready to go drag people out of the state house into the street. He said, "That's what we went in my country." He says, "We drug them out of the capital and stuff." But
that'd be great. Human. But
But they knew what was going on. And other people will say, "Well, if you try to do this, the FBI will come in here and will infiltrate it." You know that they will sabotage it from the beginning. That Federal Bureau of Investigation, that's pretty much their job these days. Yeah. It has been for a while, I think.
Yeah. Also, another thing Jeremy was saying, I don't want to go back, too much, but the whole Trump strike on Syria, that was, they warned them and they struck an empty field. So I don't know how much this Jared Kushner, other than being a marriage of political convenience, and to be able to hit for Trump to have an anti-Semite shield. Oh, I'm not against Jews. My grandchildren are Jews. In fact, it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. He had to do that. He had to marry his daughter off to one of them. It was probably one of the smartest political moves that he ever could have made, because now they come after him with all these anti-Semite things, because he moves on all their actions. But he doesn't move against any. He can't ever say that he's against Jews because, hey, he's got Jewish grandchildren. And everything Kushner has any kind of effect on him is completely innocuous. It's nothing, absolutely nothing, except for a shield. That's all he is to him. That's my opinion about it anyway.
Well, the guy owned property at 666 Park Avenue or something like that in New York. That's creepy there. There's so much.
Oh, whoa.
In your face stuff like that they play off of their myths they've created in the media all these years over and over again. Even that patent that Bill Gates had, what was it, patent 6066, and the bill they passed, they were just putting it right in our face during the COVID psyop. And I believe that it was just a psyop to see how much their mind control had worked, whether it was effective or not. An idiot test.
Test run. That's all that is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally agree. It's just a test run.
Now the economy and the money, pay attention to anything else but. And I saw a $29 sandwich, a ham and cheese sandwich that was somebody posted today. Now it was in New York City, but $29 for one ham and cheese sandwich. That's what the future looks like here if things continue as they have been. And I don't see why they won't. They want to push this war until. They call it a multipolar world, but it's all going to end up being digital currency, and if they have their way. And I don't know, there's a war on cash. I saw a place, I went to buy some books today, and the sign at the view said, "Sorry for the inconvenience. We no longer take $100 bills." And a guy locally here on the radio was reporting Christine Lagarde saying, "Well, if you use 1,000 euros cash or more, then you're in the gray market. You may get fined or sent to prison for paying for something with $1,000, more than $1,000 of cash, euros. You can go to prison now in the EU." That's the gray market, she called it. They played that on the local radio here. And that Christine Lagarde is just, this same group of demons. I remember her talking about how it was something about numerology at the beginning of the year, and it was just creepy, just these people put it in your face, like I say. Gets kind of old.
Yeah, they're not hiding anything anymore.
So I figured
nothing really.
That I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped.
So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.